So if you're ready, I'm ready.
Is you gonna call Megan? Is it Megan?
That's the let me give you the order of the day.
Okay.
Today we'll begin with a political briefing, and a little bit later on we'll have a discussion with Megan Rouillard, who's a LIM member in the basement in the States. And she's not being mistreated over there, mind you, just because she's in the basement. She's actually working. She's working on a series of science projects having a lot to do with economy, the way Mr. LaRouche is thinking, and the challenges that we need to solve to get to Mars. I don't know exactly what she's going to talk about today. Maybe Matt or Pascal, they know, they can tell us. But other than that, we're going to have a very interesting discussion with her on the general broad idea of the Mars project and the idea of science.
The subject is actually going to be called Relativity.
So the subject, I'm told, is going to be relativity in physical economics. Okay? So this is a little bit later. So for now, I'm going to be talking to you. And I would like to begin tonight's briefing and address myself to the better part of yourself. Assuming you are aware that you have that better part of yourself within you, that being your creative reason. And I hope that you'll be able to listen to me and later on Megan with the interest of somebody, you know, when somebody knows they're talking about, somebody's talking about you, you wanna make sure you know what they're saying about you. So that kind of interest, you have to pay attention to what's going on right now in this course of history, because what is really happening is really something really intimate about all of us as human beings. And because when we think of the identity of mankind, you have to think, like, or one human being, if you're going to think of your identity. And you cannot think of that identity without thinking about mankind itself. And what mankind is facing today is an increasingly more intense situation, right? An increasingly more a richer situation in terms of a potential for change. And the kind of change that can really change the world for good, and that very soon, very drastically, if the world as a whole comes to its senses, right, and we adopt Lyndon LaRouche's policy for a new credit system to rebuild the world and redevelop the parts of the nations, the parts of the world which were previously developed, and maybe for some nations it's going to be the first time that they develop in any serious way. Of course, this nice potential for good is comes with a partner, you know, or a potential actor, which is if we don't succeed, we have a potential to have a dark age. Which that we shouldn't like dismiss this idea. We should not forget that this is actually already here if we don't make that change. And I will start today's briefing a little bit by this idea of the mass strike that LaRouche was referencing in his little quote we listened to. But also, this is a This is a citation that LaRouche has been making molto the whole past year, actually, since at least April. He's been referencing Percy B. Shelley's A Defense of Poetry, and specifically the part of the paper we're going to read quickly before we get into the leading developments that that's been going on this week. So we're going to read that, which, like I said, it talks about the phenomenon, which this is, has to be clear in your mind by the end of the evening, the idea that you have a mass strike phenomenon where people who are showing up to, who were showing up to town hall meetings and are now showing up to like protests in Washington, they're not your typical political nuts, you know? They're not these guys obsessed with a single issue. These are people who never thought that they would have to do that. But they're doing it because it's their very survival. It's the very country that they're seeing maybe potentially being lost. So there's a high, the stakes are high, but with the right leadership, we can keep things relatively calm and organize towards the mission that must succeed. So I'm going to start. Maybe I can have a volunteer read. Anybody want to read? You want to read?
Sure, why not?
You'll be able to read very loud so that everybody can hear you?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. So you can start from this
at.
And also, two times slower than you would normally read.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of people. And we want to make sure we hear everything. Okay.
At such periods, there is an accumulation of the power of communicating and receiving intense and impassioned conceptions respecting man and nature. The persons in whom the power resides may often, as far as regards many portions of their nature, have little apparent correspondence with that spirit of good of which they are the ministers. But even whilst they deny and abjure, they are yet compelled to serve the power which is seated on the throne of their own soul. It is impossible to read the compositions of the most celebrated writers of the present day without being startled with the electric life which burns within their words. They measure the circumference and sound, the depths of human nature, with a comprehensive and all-penetrating spirit, and they are themselves perhaps the most sincerely astonished at its manifestations, for it is less their spirit than the spirit of the age. Poets are the hierophants of an unprehended inspiration, the mirrors of the gigantic shadows which futurity casts upon the present, the words which express what they understand not, the trumpets which sing to battle and feel not what they inspire, the influence which is moved not but moves. Poets are the unacknowledged legislators of the world.
All right, so we can have the light, please. And we won't be needing this for a while. So, this is the mass strike time. We're in Montreal, so we don't necessarily see it unless you hang around the LaRouche people's tables in Montreal. Because you have a pockets wherever we go, which we're bringing the phenomenon of the mass strike in Montreal. And you have people who spontaneously show themselves to be political. They have a political opinion, which it was pretty hard to see before that they had that political opinion. But when you confront them with the reality, of course, it becomes quite clear if they are which way they've been accustomed to be thinking. And obviously, the idea at the end, the fact that poets are the unacknowledged legislators of the world, this, I mean, you can't necessarily read that without seeing the role of the greatest poet alive today, Lyndon LaRouche, right? In that he's composing the most challenging poem, which is the humanity living in 2009, at the time right now. This change is potentially changing with this idea of the most beautiful good that can come out of it. And the extent that we are associated with LaRouche, we are participating in this beautiful project that we have to serve mankind in a time when mankind does not have a lot of leaders. They don't have a lot of models which remain stable enough for for long enough. The ideas that are still true 5 minutes after the series of scandals that we're seeing develop. And in that, having said that, we are obviously faced, if you're familiar with this movement, there's two kinds of ways of thinking at this point in the battle. And you have the face of the enemy is the face of the queen, right? This is the poster image of the queen, or you could even have another queen, which is Obama with the mustache, you know, because you have these two types of poster images that the people have to have in their mind, because they represent this idea of empire, right? They represent the idea of globalization, free trade, and then what we have to fight for. This has to be clear too, that you have the principle of sovereign nation states and nations developing their own population with infrastructure projects, I wanted to say this a bit later, but let's just start seeing some of the news that the developments of this week, because as this mass strike is hitting right now, you have an acceleration of developments. I've looked at a ton of different stories that are very all interesting in themselves, but if we went through all of these things, it would be kind of a distraction right now because there's just so many things to look into. We'll still look into a few of them because you have to have an idea of that this is how this process is being, how this process is unfolding. And obviously, the greatest battle is being fought with the question of healthcare. And obviously, we were the first people starting in April to put the Obama face. I almost feel like it's old news by now because it's already dead. It's a policy which is probably not going to survive. You had basically this fight around the healthcare. As a flank, we were able to bring to the front, if you want, the role or the mentality of the British Empire. Because in Obama citing the British NICE model and the National Health Institute healthcare in Britain, we were able to call their system into question and saying that their system is actually Nazi too, right? And so, like, we had a little BBC woman that called Deborah Freeman, one of our spokeswomen for LaRouche, and what she told this woman was saying, your model that Obama's copying, That's the Nazi healthcare model. And I mean, we actually went in the streets this week with this pamphlet, where we were telling people, as much as one in six seniors,
one in six deaths, isn't it?
Yeah. One in six deaths.
Yeah.
Right, in England, mm-hmm. or with the British healthcare. Were people who received the service of their government in the form of an involuntary euthanasia. Mm. So that's what you get, that's what you pay for.
Deaths.
Death. One in six. In personne sur six.
What's the time frame for that? When does this happen? Or is this just a constant?
Is this like Dr.
From 2007? To 2008, within 1 year. So what they said 16.5% of the people who died, right? And there's the way that this happened. You had and I have this circle. You see my plan for the class. I've written down. You have to destroy the British. So I can't forget to talk about this. And how does that relate to this healthcare reform in Obama and this revelation this week that one in six people were being killed by involuntary euthanasia? You have the Prince Charles. Prince Charles is the you have he's been the president of the King's Fund, which since 1986, blah blah blah, and they control or they direct the operations of the Marie Curie Hospice, and the actual program was called the Liverpool Care Pathway. This is a program that was included into the NICE changes that had been promoted by Tony Blair, and one of Tony Blair's healthcare advisor was Simon Stevens. So you have this guy Simon Stevens working with the British to put the policies in that end up killing the citizens or the subjects of the Queen in England, right? And how do they make the decision? Like, how is this made? Is this, they will deny fluids, then deny nutrition, deny medicine, and once they make a determination that they're close to death. The problem is that sometimes they make that determination, but that determination is wrong.
People get better sometimes.
Yeah. How do you know? How do you know that they're not going to get better?
Now, do the people in England understand that this nice healthcare they have there is euthanasia?
Well, that's the beauty of this fight, is because some people might have a sense of that, but now these are coming out in major publications. This is going up, and the name of LaRouche is being introduced in this fight. And they're seeing, not only is this happening in their nation, but this is what is the plan for United States. This has been transforming Canada's healthcare system. And I'll just give you another example, just so you see what happens when the culture has forgot to pay attention to the questions of the political question, the question of how we're developing as a society. I'll show you a nice woman, right? She had the unfortunate situation where she was trying to have a baby for a long time. She had 5 miscarriages. So she really wanted a child. She was keeping on trying. And when she did have she was actually gave birth to a little boy, I think, And there was a condition in the healthcare, the NICE program, that said, well, the babies have to be 22 weeks.
24 weeks.
No, 22. It has to be 22 weeks to have...
To be saved.
To be saved. The doctors, they have established charts, which are very neat, white paper. The blood comes later. So you have the 22 weeks established as a standard for how much advanced the pregnancy is. Now, her baby, what do you think? She was she had a baby which was 21 weeks and 5 days. So according to those numbers, the doctors who were perfect servants of the law, you know, they'll read exactly like our good Cartesian. And that's when you should take note of this idea of how the evils of Cartesianism. Because you have people faced with a situation of life, but they see diktats or ideas of they see the rules as very rigid, but not very the rules that they don't think right. The rules they're not able to see the present situation. But so basically, she had to fight with her doctors to allow the baby to be given they have a special rooms or.
Incubators,
and the excuse for from the doctors is that they said we couldn't intervene because it might cause some suffering because of the baby not being a full 22 weeks, and she really had to fight. They gave a really brusque. They were very like rigid about this, and when she told them to think about his human rights, that little life that had just been born, the doctor said he hasn't got rights. He hasn't got human rights because he's a fetus. Well, in the early hours of the morning, Jaden was born. She had already named him, right? And to her mother's astonishment, she had 5 miscarriages, and this time the baby stretches out his arms. Right? Does that look like a fetus to you? Well, I don't want to make this longer than it should, but basically you get the point. This is what happens when...
Did the baby make it in the end?
No.
They aborted.
The baby died.
No, they didn't abort the baby.
The baby was born.
The baby was born, but
they didn't want to give it the attention it needed because this paper said they have to be 22 weeks.
Yeah.
The success, the survival rate of a baby, something else I read about that, was the survival rate was 26% if the baby's born like 21 weeks or whatever, but 46% if it's born 22 weeks premature. Or like if it's premature and born 22 weeks. So they could have only had like a 26% chance of saving it, which was not worth it. It's not worth the money to spend to keep it alive. So 2 hours later, it was dead.
No.
And wasn't that part of like a bunch of other families? Were there a bunch of other people?
Yeah, yeah. This woman, she obviously was, she was very, she was very traumatized by this. And but you see the strength of that woman. She went on to, you know, she was insisting with the doctor. She was wanting to fight for this. She wanted to fight for her child's life, like anybody sane individual would. But after he died, she dedicated herself to starting like a website to get the stories from other women, and she collected stories from, like, she has more than 6,000 people who are members of her website now, and over 1,000 statements over 1,000 women sharing their experiences of having lived something similar. So what does that tell you about the kind of interventions that LaRouche initiated in April of 2009, when he compared this, the advisors around Obama and the policy coming out of Obama's White House to be Hitlerian or to be fascist, to be out to kill the American population? Why do you think you have the town hall meetings? It's not because everybody read every paper, right? It's not because everybody read everything LaRouche wrote. It's because they have a sense by being human, kind of like this dynamic of what Percy Shelley talks about, where they are sensing the truth about the reality is not necessarily being said into the words. Just like however perfectly you would write a paper describing the situation today, it doesn't tell you everything. Just like this law about... What does that tell you about the intention of that law in the UK, where they're using statistical behaviorist standards of cost-efficient... cost-effectiveness-based research. Yeah, to say, well, how much money are we going to save with that? Mm-hmm. You know, because we gave $24 trillion of bailouts to Wall Street, and we know there's nothing else producing any wealth, but we can take the money from what we have to spend. That's the only thing. This kind of thinking only knows how to cut the expenses which are already existing. The money which is already there, that knows how to cut it. But what we need to have is the kind of thinking which knows how to generate wealth, right? So that's where LaRouche comes in. And as a special kind of soul or a special kind of expert who can tell the truth about these matters, and not only tell the truth about these matters, but organize and dedicate his life so that we have... a process, a dynamic in place by the time that we need to fight for our lives here. Because there's no guarantee that the humanity will survive this crisis. So there's a bunch of very macabre stories on our website. Not because we like death, like the Goths, you know. We talk about the reality that the Wall Street intention to use the policies that would kill people as a way to save money, as a way to make money on insurance policies, make money on the reform or what have you. Like I said, I'm not gonna talk about everything, but because I wanted to also talk about a few things that happened today. There's also, remember, we have a war in Afghanistan, right? And we have Obama who campaigned to be against deploy the troops out of Afghanistan and the whole Middle East. Well, now he wants to add, some say, up to 40,000 more troops.
I don't think he ever campaigned on removing troops from Afghanistan.
No?
It was Iraq. He campaigned on removing troops from Iraq, but he was always for putting troops in.
He was always for that?
Yeah.
Well, by the sound of his campaign, he was going to be, I don't know, I guess I must have slipped. I must have missed that. I got carried away by his
the rhetoric.
He was awesome.
Yeah. It was great times. But now I'm awake now. But you also have, like, LaRouche did a webcast September 8th, and he reiterated the same concepts that he develops in his paper called The Science of Physical Economy, and the pretitle is Economics as History. So within the paper and the webcast, obviously LaRouche is the authority right now that people are looking to. The only competent conception of how you get out of this kind of economic crisis, which most forecasters have totally failed, have proven themselves totally incompetent at making. LaRouche is very alone in being a forecaster. Doesn't even have good
credentials.
No, you know when you have a competitor or somebody who comes close to you, no competition for LaRouche's forecast. He's alone in his field. He gets to.
He gets a challenge.
We're happy he has a creativity, or else he would be pretty bored all alone in his little corner. But obviously, in terms of economists, you have like the major group. One of the major economist group called the Stanford Group, which have been basically humbled, even though they're economists and very well famous economists, well known. They've been humbled by the fact that by LaRouche. His competency, like his authority and how he's shown himself to understand the dynamic shaping this collapse. And more specifically, you had a triple curve animation, which he showed in his August 1st webcast, which was an update. This has been first came out in 1996. There was a revision in 2001 or 2002, something like that. And now we just had the newest update, which I'm going to show quickly so that you get a sense. Yeah, you're on the ball. so you get a sense that that the economists, what LaRouche is saying happened recently is that with the triple curve, these economists, not only the Stanford Group people, but economists all over the world in China, Russia, whatever, they've made the breakthrough. A lot of people have made the conceptual breakthrough in seeing why they weren't able to see the way the crisis was going, because they hadn't conceived of they had a problem with the paradox of having at the same time. Inflation, hyperinflation, and deflation at the same time, where you had hyperinflation of the monetary mass and deflation of the financial aggregates. And I'll show you a little piece of
monetary funds.
Hyperinflation
of monetary funds
of the money supply.
Yeah,
hyperinflation of the money supply at the same time that the financial aggregates the you know, the value of the paper offshoots, you know, derivatives, stocks, and things like this, are now in a hyper deflationary phase.
Okay. So, we're going to take a look at this and put the light, and I'll put this here.
I've got some of the technical questions here. Let's take on this, just a minute from now, this triple curve, which I've used as a pedagogical device since about the beginning of 1996. And I'll discuss some of these other technical matters in that light. Explain itself, and this will be on the website in many ways, again and again. Point is, you have three basic parameters you have to look at in order to understand how our economy is functioning. The lower curve, the ones descending, these are all in terms of per capita rates. We have been descending in terms of the employment in productive labor, such as agriculture, infrastructure, basic physical production, over this period, per capita. The ratio is, and the percentile of the total throughput of the economy has been declining in these terms. We've also had an increase in the monetary aggregates and the financial aggregates. Now what's happened is we're building up a monetary debt built at a skyrocketing rate relative to a declining actual physical output production. But you can see in any community, how many factories are there? How many farms are there? How many farmers are there? What's the level of productivity? What was it? They backward or is it progressive? Is it technological progress? What's the effect of the loss of the automobile industry in this physical output relationship? Now, but at the same time, we've had essentially since 1966, we've had a skyrocketing increase under the influence of the Vietnam War economy. A skyrocketing increase in the amount of monetary obligation. We've also had an increase in the financial aggregates. Now what has happened now is we've moved to a period in which these values, as you see, the financial aggregates have begun to fall. This decline in financial aggregates, which has occurred just recently, in this last period, is the onset of the breakdown crisis. So, we are dealing with this kind of situation, not what you read in the newspapers. This is what I presented also back in 2007, in defining the problem which we face now. Either we fix this problem, as I described it, or we don't make it as a nation.
That's it. So, there's a lot more we could do in studying the triple curve, LaRouche's triple curve, and studying LaRouche's economics and all this. We're not going to do that right now, but obviously the website is there if you have an excess of questions right now. There's also our classes every week. We try to have a class. Tomorrow we're going to go to Boston. We're going to Boston with a few people. Some of you might come to a town hall meeting that is organized by LaRouche PAC in Massachusetts. Right, Harley Schlanger is going to be speaking. Getting back to what I wanted to communicate to you guys today, you know, we've got the if we go back to Obama as a pawn for the British Empire, LaRouche came out this week and said that Obama is behaving like Honecker. I think that's the name. Honecker, right? He was I guess he was heading the German Democratic Republic during the 1989. The last time we had a mass crisis on the planet was around 1989. And to see the kind of mentality of the British Empire and all this, as the people controlling the assets, the people, the statesmen out there making a fool of themselves like Honecker or Obama, being the guys defending, being the fools, just like Hitler was, being the fools willing or vain enough to put themselves in a situation where they're saying, no, we're going to go with our program. You can't stop us. I mean, we're going to be here for another 100 years, this guy was saying, Honecker. Right? And a couple of weeks later, the whole regime came down. The wall came down a couple weeks later, and a couple months later, the whole government came down. So this is LaRouche came out this week saying this is what Obama's facing. He can go keep on talking about healthcare reform. It's already dead. You have the Baucus bill, which is not gonna. It had a lot of troubles just getting out of the committee. And a lot of people, both Democrats and Republicans, came out publicly, voiced their opinion against it. These are friends of Baucus. I mean, there's just too much. It's like a mudslide. LaRouche also referred to it as a mudslide. The way Obama's presidency is turning out. There's just no cohesion in this thing. It's just reactions without a plan. Just like this joint session at the Senate, this is intervening fly-by-night operation. And, you know, Obama is also the kind of guy who is pushing the other favorite way for the British Empire to kill people, other than denying health care, is making people believe in green energy, right? And this was being pushed by the British Empire. But we've learned this week that apparently there's a big fight within the British oligarchy apparatus. So some people have now decided, you know, we're going to go push nuclear energy. You know, we're going to go for for a little bit of industrialization. You know, because LaRouche, he's kicking our ass. We have to redeploy our forces, readjust our plan. And we're going to have to concede that we're going to break with the other totally insane part of the oligarchy, and we'll just be the insane part. We won't be the totally insane part of the British Empire. Right? So, like, some people were asking, does this mean that they're going to champion Lin as their hero? Nah. That's not the way it works. But it means that they're less crazy than the other people, and that they're seeing the ship is sinking. So they don't want to be that stupid. They're willing to start making some concessions or compromises as they like their politicians to make. So I was saying this because you have on one side the nuclear energy getting a big push from the Economist this week, but at the same time, you have something came out on our website today. Did you know, I mean, because the whole thing about the arguments have been coming out against, like, just the insanity in physical terms, that 1 square mile is needed for 1 nuclear power plant. 3 square miles are needed for 1 geothermal plant. 500 square miles are needed for biofuels, ethanol, and all this stuff. 1,000 square miles is needed for solar panels. Right? So there's one more consideration, which I thought was interesting. And most people probably never, those greenies you meet, they probably never hear think about that. Solar collectors must be washed down once a month, okay? Or they collect too much dirt to be effective. Huh?
Another rhythm on the desert, right? Where's no water?
So we're watering solar panels in a food crisis.
Yeah. Yeah, and not only that, but they need to be cooled by water. So where in the desert, right? Are you going to find? Will you find that water? So it is therefore imperative that we look towards nuclear power, right? This was. And plus, with the nuclear power, you can have desalination.
Yeah.
And.
Are you taking all that? Like, that's from The Economist?
No. This is from an op-ed.
Okay.
That. Somebody named Lamar Alexander, Secretary of the Interior, I don't know exactly. I'm reading this from the website, our internal website. That might be some of our. I don't want to go through the whole thing, but this idea still remains like the basic dynamic of what is the principles of generating these basically wasteful sources of energy, especially when you could grow food on that land and you can do so much more. So remember, the British Empire is out to kill you, so if you're not fighting to destroy the British Empire, either you don't understand something very important about what the British Empire is, what is the intention of the British Empire, or you don't understand the fact that as your own power to intervene in this fight, and it starts by making discoveries about the nature of the enemy, the nature of the fight, the nature of the potential for people to guide the process in a way which can increase the potential of success, right? Because there's no guarantee you're gonna win this fight. We might all be dead, right? Like the people who are asking questions to Lynn. What happens if we don't do this? Should we worry about this? Should we, if we don't do this change, you're gonna die.
We all die.
So, if you thought doing what you were doing was important, maybe you want to reconsider. So, you have a hundred thousands of people who went to Washington Saturday. They're pissed off against Obama. They are giving him a lot of qualificative adjectives. They're giving him a lot of adjectives. Not all of them are good. Actually, most of them are not good. He's being compared to a lot of people, famous people, but not necessarily good political ideas represented by the people he's compared to, like, I don't know, Hitler. But that's not the only one. Also, you have to remember that the other enemy you have is the way the environment is being controlled by the British Empire and the control of the media, which they're trying to convince people that this is going to be. They're trying to convince people that this is really about the right conservatives against the left.
Liberal.
Democrats or liberals, right? But that's the biggest bullshit. Because you have, hello. Because you have obviously, mom, pop, everybody, the whole family, the whole neighborhood is coming down to these protests in Washington. In case you missed the beginning, you might be aware of that. Contrary to what is appearing on our on television, internet, or whatever, depending where you're looking at, you'll have a different story. But I've seen numbers that go up to like a million. I don't know if that's true. I wasn't there to count everyone, but what you have in like CNN or Washington Post, I think, where they were trying to diminish that by saying, yeah, there's a protest. Yeah, people don't like Obama, but it's only 10,000 people, right? But then when you look at the videos, you can go on YouTube, you can see that this is like hundreds of thousands of people. You're seeing a street like on Canada Day, except it's three times bigger. You have a mile long street, and then it's full of people.
They took a picture from space.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You can see all the people.
Wow.
Well, that's the thing. That's what is too bad about this, because you have obviously so many other concerns that are being voiced by these millions or hundreds of thousands of people, and I haven't seen a lot of people with signs even making a slight allusion to the problem being about race. It's not about race. It's not about race. You have a situation which is people don't necessarily understand everything, why they're there, why they are showing up at these what were town halls. Now the town halls they don't necessarily you had a break, right? In August, you had the August break where the people left the Congress, they returned to their districts. And when they went there, they say, oh my God, the Washington people, they loved Obama's policy. But the people in my district, they want to kill me. So then you had this process where every city, every town hall meeting were getting like 500 to 1,000, 2,000 people showing up to these town hall meetings. And if you take the stats of that over the course of a few days, you know, you might have 10,000 people per day increasing, where at the beginning of the week you have 10,000 per day, and at the end of the week it's 15,000. And what did that... That was in August, the whole end of August, and then it moved into September. And in September, you have hundreds of thousands of people in Washington. I don't think the Tea Parties started organized those events, I think. But I don't think the September 12th was the first one either. And you have people, I've seen in the videos on YouTube, where they come from Montana. Now, I haven't checked that, but where is Montana?
It's far.
But you get the idea. I mean, this is not some people that are just in Washington and, like, instead of watching a movie, they'll go to the Congress and say, you know, Obama's destroying my nation. There's no future for my children. I'm losing everything.
What are the signs you got? What are the signs you got?
There's actually, the ones I'm saying, they're not... You're not. I should have taken note of that. Oh, maybe yeah, we can watch the one. Do you want to watch a short one?
Yeah.
It's 10 after 8.
Okay.
Let's just show a little thing. Just to get a little. DC. I saw one which was on NBC, just to show you this is a mainstream one. So
a sea of people as far as the eye could see stretched from the Capitol to the White House today. Tens of thousands frustrated and angry over what they feel is too much big government in their lives and a president they don't trust in the White House.
There's a lot of bullshit in this video.
President Obama was on the road far from those protests, trying to sell his message on health care in Minnesota. We have it all covered, and we begin on Capitol Hill with NBC's Tom Costello and today's massive rally. Good evening, Tom.
Hi, Amy. Good evening to you. Park police estimate the crowd at tens of thousands. Our own people think hundreds of thousands of people were here to have a voice or to express their voice to Capitol Hill. So many people, D.C. police had to close down Pennsylvania Avenue for a time to accommodate everybody making their way to the National Mall. Their message, no to runaway government and no to government health care. They came by the tens of thousands, carrying a vast array of protest signs and claiming to represent every state in the union.
Do you have any idea what it takes to get someone from Montana to come to D.C.?
United in their anger at President Obama, Congress, and a government they see as out of control.
Well, I'm tired of the communism that's in Washington, D.C.
We're not right-wing radicals. We are American people. We're just like everybody else out there. We have something to say.
I stand before you an angry man.
Jim Anderer came from New York, blaming President Obama's Chrysler bailout for losing his Jeep dealership.
Island Jeep was seized from me, stolen from me, with no compensation whatsoever.
Mark Catalano came from New Hampshire.
Healthcare's broken. I'm an employer. I can't provide it to my employees. It's broken. It needs to be fixed. Fix it. Don't screw it up any more than it is.
Most of the crowd made up of conservatives and independents with different agendas.
I'm scared to death for my country. I believe Obama is running our country into the ground.
But united in their distrust of big government and angry at billion and trillion dollar bailouts and rising debt.
They're spending too much money we don't have. They're going to put future generations in the debt they'll never get out of.
We the people have had enough!
This rally organized by a collection of conservative and libertarian groups.
Too much power, too little freedom. It is time to restore constitutional government.
Almost all echoing a common theme.
We must stop this government takeover of health care.
And coming after a summer of heated town hall meetings and Congressman Joe Wilson's outburst at President Obama during Wednesday's address to Congress. Among today's organizers, former House Majority Leader Dick Armey,
now the chairman of conservative action group Freedom Works.
I think if it's necessary, we'll come back next year at this time.
A cross-section of America determined to be heard.
A handful of Republican lawmakers also here today, but the Republican leadership...
Their analysis is not quite accurate, so that's why I wanted to spare you. But
it's funny, they try to paint this thing as being like the anti-big government people versus, you know, like they try to make it a black and white issue mm-hmm. the narrative is concerned. But then you look at the signs like shut down the Federal Reserve, and like they're obviously not they have nothing to do with the narrative that the media is trying to paint it to be.
Just for those who weren't here at the beginning, we started with talking about the principle of dynamics. That LaRouche was talking very often recently about there's actually a poet called Percy B. Shelley where he's talking about the dynamics of mass strike. There are these times in history when people that you don't expect will be the people leading a mass strike are taken over by the spirit of the age, for is one way to say it, where the dynamics is ripe for a social change, and the people, what's important to grasp this is not any idea of mysticism of how this happens, but the principle that you have an idea or a dynamics, a social dynamic, which is shaping. Which is grabbing people, getting them to do things. You know, which is part of the dynamics of the universe. Which the universe, if we know anything about science, is always in a state of anti-entropy, where the universe wants to go to the next higher step. And obviously, we can't do that without LaRouche's implementation of LaRouche's. New credit system. So we can talk about all of this more a bit later. Now we'll take a break and get Megan to talk to us. Who she's in Leesburg. So let me call her and